Welcome to Business Second Opinion with Carol Sanford, a respected thought leader in the world of business design for growing people in order to grow your business. She always offers a contrarian view on what sacred temples of wisdom, such as the Harvard Business Review, advise. Her approach is based on living systems research and her four decades of practice with Fortune 500 companies and rockstar entrepreneurs. I'm Zach Swartout, and I'm your host. Today, Carol is giving a business second opinion on mindfulness and consciousness. She's going to be taking a look today at the article entitled What Mindfulness Is and Isn't Good For by Daniel Goleman from the September 2017 issue of the Harvard Business Review. Welcome, Carol.
Hi, Zach.
Hi. So what are the premises that Daniel Goleman's putting forward in this article?
Well, let me back up and give a little context for the idea of mindfulness itself, because it's an increasingly popular program in corporations.
Sure.
It's now considered in some places like Silicon Valley, an employee benefit that you get if you come there. You get to learn and have sessions around mindfulness. I work at Google in the innovation lab, and they have the intention to enlighten minds, to open hearts, and to create world peace. I mean, that's what they say. So it's pretty high intention, but I've never heard it described there as a business pursuit. However, this particular article is making the assumption, or at least it's advocating for, the idea that mindfulness is something that really could help a business. And in fact, their thought is that people do it in order to improve the effectiveness of the organization. As you said, it's written by Daniel Goleman, who people may remember is the kind of founder or creator of the concept of emotional intelligence. He has a new book out, which is probably the reason and the timing for this particular piece that he's done with the University of Michigan neuroscientist Richard Davidson. The purpose of the book and the articles is really based on some research they've been doing, and they wanted to report it out here. Now, I think that part of what they're trying to do here is demonstrate some scientific method study of meditation. And it's really hard to use scientific method to study something that is internally working and then tie it to external results or outcomes. But the premise of this particular article, given the question, what can you use meditation for and what can you not? What's it not good for? They offer four specific effects that they believe they can report. The first was improved memory. All the people involved in it seem to have a memory jump. Reducing stress, getting a stronger ability to focus and stay focused. And then they experience people expanding a sense of global citizenship, a sense of being a steward of something bigger than themselves. You can see how they could measure some of these, because certainly the focus kind of idea gives your mind less time that it wanders away and be distracted from the work that you're on. And therefore, you could be able to get higher productivity, which you could count. And you'd be able to get a higher conceptual understanding of things that the organization was producing. You can see the possibility of being able to measure those, and I think that's why they reported them.
Got it. So what are some of your concerns here with this idea? And I think we had talked before we even jumped in here around kind of trying to help differentiate between consciousness and mindfulness. And so if you could shine a light on a little bit of that for us, that would be, I think, really helpful.
Yeah, the idea of that Goldman is using here and that most people are using comes out of Zen meditation, which is one major form of meditation and mindfulness training. These are based on the idea that you have to separate the time you're working on mindfulness from when you're at work. So you get up in the morning and you have a 20 to 30 minute sitting meditation, and then late in the day. And they even suggest another maybe 10 minute segments broken up during the day. Now, for me, consciousness is the reason for doing that kind of meditation. And if you realize that what you're wanting to do is produce more consciousness, that is the ability to see and understand how my mind is at work and what it is doing, then I could say consciousness has a subset of things, of which sitting meditation is one form. And that's really what Goldman is talking about here, a sitting meditation. But there are actually other methods for actually producing consciousness, which would produce the same effects, and I believe others. In fact, I know others, because I work with a method that I would describe as production of consciousness that is the same effect and the same similar method anyway. All right, so the way it works is with sitting meditation, you sit and you watch your breath. Watching the breath is the practice of learning to watch if the mind wanders away, let it go if you're worried about it, and then bring it back. In the way I work, we do some things about helping a person or a group of people be able to engage in doing their normal work, like their routine work, or they're talking to one another, or they could even be driving, although that's probably not the best time to practice this. And what they're learning to do is observe and manage themselves and their own state while they're doing that. So instead of watching the breath, you're watching how much you have the ability to say, all right, I'm going to stay focused on this. The other way that this is done in some practices is with something called a mantra, where you get a very simple phrase and you say it repeatedly. And that process allows you to really pay attention. And that separation that you can do is very similar to the kind of thing that Zen meditation does, but you can do it as using your work, but you actually have to do the separation, or otherwise you're not in consciousness. You're just back on your one-track mind running through things.
So help me to see a little bit further here. And if we could dive down maybe even a little bit more depth here, I don't quite see how this correlates to meditation. So if you could continue to kind of flesh this out for us a little bit more, I think that would be helpful.
Yeah. The idea of meditation is to be able to concentrate the mind and be in charge of the mind and choose what it pays attention to. In meditation, you're given something to pay attention to you so you can tell whether you're doing that or not. The one that Goldman suggests in this article is notice your breath. It's a quite perennial one, been used for millennia, and it's one I've used myself in addition to some others. There is also the schools, which come a large number of them out of India and Hindu meditation practices, where you're given a mantra or you choose a mantra that is very, very simple. In this work, we do something very similar to what you would call a mantra, as we ask people to pay attention to name something that they really want to be using to help them stay focused. And then I call it working on consciousness at work. There's one particular thing we do in addition to something like setting a personal aim, which is what we call framework thinking. So you use a thinking form like the mantra, and you use it to look at something, and you notice whether or not you're falling back into your automatic way of looking at a person or at a project or what you might have called a problem. And you notice that what you're doing is doing it in the rote way, the kind of way that you mechanically, automatically do. And again, that's the point of consciousness, is to try and get over this mechanicalness. So you're able to take a framework, like I could give you a picture of one, where you think about kind of three lines of work, we call it. You nest one line inside of another, and you say, this would promote global citizenship. All right, I'm thinking about myself, but am I thinking about the community I live in? And am I thinking about how we fit and can help be a part of something greater and making that work better? If I can see that image, that framework in my mind, I can tell how small or how large, not large so much, but inclusive I'm able to be. That is framework thinking, which is very similar to looking at the breath, except it's looking at where your mind goes instead of using only the looking at the breath to determine whether you're still focused on what you said you wanted to be focused on.
Got it. So when you say framework thinking, and I think you just introduced this by talking about this framework, I think I caught it called three lines of work.
Yeah.
What do you mean by framework thinking, and how would I use that with the same kind of goal that Goldman was talking about around global citizenship or expanding a pursuit around peace and kindness?
Well, I guess another way of describing a framework is to say I'm choosing how I'm going to think about something. So most of the time, we think of things in a binary way, good and bad, right and wrong, this and that. And we can only see two choices. If you were to ask, what is a third higher way that takes into account both of those? We call that a law of three. You have said, I am going to take into account something that holds all of this at one time. I draw it with images. So I might draw two confronting arrows that are running into each other, but then take one and go straight up in the air and say, what would happen if I were to be more inclusive of other people, like others in other countries, other nations? That kind of thinking, where I actually ask myself and I use that image in my mind, which is the framework thinking, to literally frame what and how I'm thinking, I tend to become more whole and complete. And so that's why I know that as I've watched the people in the organization where we've taught something as simple as the law of three or three lines of work, they do become much more generous. They become kinder. They have more respect and value for people who are not like them because they now can see their own mind starting to be judgmental. And in fact, part of framework thinking is to learn to watch your own attitude. So that process of bringing those together and bringing those frameworks together and being able to look at them and use them to substitute the mechanical way we normally would think is what I'm talking about here.
One last question here. Now, I wanted to try to get a sense from you of like a concrete example where you've seen this at work, where you've introduced a framework of some kind and there's been some kind of a shift or some kind of realization on the ground as you're working with leaders.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know about the fires that have happened in Northern California of recent. And one of the companies I work with, which is an amazing little company called Orchard Supply, it had many locations, stores, their retail outlets up and down the coast of California and into the heartland. There were fires. Now, one of the frameworks that we work with is something called corporate direction, which is similar to the focusing mechanism that Goldman is talking about. But instead of using only the breath and then hoping it transfers because I've been sitting and doing it in the morning or later in the day, instead, with a corporate direction says, what do we want to be based on who we are uniquely? And as we looked at that and developed a corporate direction for Orchard, we realized in the way they were founded and the way they are now that they're about being a good neighbor. And so when the fires came about, they were constantly, they found themselves asking one another as something came up. There was people without a home or people without water that they said, what would a good neighbor do? And that question just always led them to be able to say, well, a good neighbor would do X. And in many cases, it was providing, loaning shovels so that people could help slow down fires along fire lines. They were taking cases of water, which they normally sell in the store, and making them available to shelters where people were going. The point was that the framework of corporate direction, which had come through a long discussion and now was owned by everyone, was focused like a laser beam on how a business was able to have that combination of focus, global citizenship, what they also called caring in a really deep, meaningful way. So they wanted to do more than just give away things. They wanted to help get people back on their feet, help them rebuild their businesses.
We'll be right back. I want to remind everyone about how to participate in the show by joining in our quiz on SurveyMonkey each week. This is where you can offer articles for review from HBR, or other popular business written media. Find the link at www.businesssecondopinion.com. It's more fun to listen when you participate. To get educated about Carol's approach to critiquing popular ideas, download her chapter at www.businesssecondopinion.com. Plus, there's a weekly drawing for a free copy of Carol's new book, The Regenerative Business. For all those who participate in the quiz, write comments or article recommendations, you will qualify to be in the drawing. So, Carol, I have some follow-up questions again this week. And so specifically, I wanted to dig into a few distinctions here to help once again clarify and have us dig even deeper into some of this material. So how do you see mindfulness as part of an overall approach to working with executives and organizations? And how do you see that as distinctly different from Goleman in this context? So said another way, like, how do you see mindfulness and the way that Goleman describes it as fitting into your approach or as different?
I think our intentions are identical. Both of us are working on developing a disciplined mind. The mind is disciplined by the person using it. And we know that there is so much cacophony in our lives that if we don't have a practice in some way that really brings us to being able to actually choose what and how we're thinking, that we will fall into practices of thinking that are what David Bohm used to call thoughting. Right, where I'm not really thinking, I'm just bringing crazy stuff forward, or at least things that are not whole and complete. Now, the difference in what we're doing, and it's not a difference, I think, in some ways, because I still practice meditation myself twice a day on almost every day of my life for the last 40-something years. That process of sitting in a quiet place or doing a walking meditation or meditating on prayers from saints, etc. There are many ways one could do that. This is not a substitute for that, but it is a way that you can create consciousness at work for people who are not going to go sit and do a sitting meditation with your legs folded, right, paying attention to your breath. Most people are not going to do that. But the benefits, as Goldman talks about here, that come out of it, the idea of your memory getting better, less stress, being able to be focused and be able to become a global citizen are pretty nice things. In addition to, if you could have a community of people doing things together, that's what I'm adding to it. Because the framework thinking that discipline gives you something around which to discipline the mind and to do it for the benefit of stakeholders to the business particularly has a business benefit, but it creates a more responsible organization in the global citizen sense, as well as responsibility for the lives of customers, consumers, co-creators who are part of your employees and supplier system, the communities you live in, the ecological system. I believe that when you're doing that at work and communities are doing it together, it's a bit like they're sitting in meditation off somewhere together. And they are, except they're meditating on using a framework that manages the mind, or the framework didn't do it. The person uses the framework to manage their own mind. Like I talked about with the orchard supply, be it what would a good neighbor do? That process builds a cohesion and an ability to move rapidly together that I think if you only do the sitting meditation and do it individually and treat it as all individuals, that you don't get all the power that you get from mindfulness.
Got it. Okay. So I noticed as I was reading through this article that Goldman didn't really elaborate on his point about how mindfulness can't be the answer to everything, and just talked about how he saw mindfulness being the most useful and then gave those kind of key points. And I think we were once again discussing this beforehand. You said you can actually show how mindfulness can be the answer to anything. So help me to understand that a little bit and kind of where your thinking was going along those lines.
Well, here we have different intentions and purposes. He's trying to prove, do a study and show someone what it can do. I think the article title probably wasn't designed to be enticing and as a way to say, well, there's four things we can prove. We can't necessarily prove all the other things because we can't use scientific method on internal reflection. Now, my intention is very different. And what I believe is that it changes. We do know that regular meditation, sitting meditation, improves health as well as productivity, which he did prove. I also know that it improves the business being able to function, and continually people come to me. In fact, another one just 2 weeks ago who came and said that the processes we're using of framework thinking, this ability to do consciousness at work, has changed his relationship with his son and, in fact, probably saved his son's life. And, you know, that may sound like a big thing, but I have it happen all the time. And so when I say everything, I mean because it changes who you are as a being. It changes teams and how they work together. It changes companies and businesses within companies about what they think their work is in the world. So I think without consciousness, we have mechanicalness. And with mechanicalness, we have no hope. With consciousness, we have hope, and therefore it can improve the working of a lot of things and maybe everything.
Wow. Okay. So it sounds like Goldman and you have similar intentions on things. And I think you spoke as well about focus and global citizenship as he did. But how do you see consciousness at work as you see it relating to kind of less stress and an increased capacity for memory? How do you see those things connected?
Yeah, that's a great question, because framework thinking, which I was talking about, I was mostly giving you examples of where you're applying it to the business. But framework thinking can be used to apply to see yourself. So one of the frameworks is called modes of behavior. And we all know we have different behaviors. I've taught this stuff for 40-something years, and I still fall into some of the modes of behavior I don't want to. The first one is reactive. The second is ego, where I can either be in arrogance or I can use it for a little confidence. And the third is purposeful. If I've got that framework, which to me are like on a continuum of sorts, I can tell when I've moved into reactive behavior. If I stay in reactive behavior very long, I can literally feel my blood pressure rise. And so I know that there's stress happening. If I stay in ego, and especially kind of the arrogant, I already know all, I'm the smartest one in the room, and I can judge you, then I know that there is a kind of process that goes on there that breaks down relationships. If we can agree on a shared purpose, immediately it drops the anxiety between us. It drops the stress. We know we're going to use a framework for the business that keeps us working on something together with a shared lens. And in fact, the framework thinking eventually gives you a shared language, which we all have in other ways, but they didn't always a language that helps us move and is really helpful. So the idea that we can be self-directed for ourselves is a massive improvement just in stress. Now, in relation to memory, I rarely take notes anymore. And one of the reasons that I don't have to, because I used to, when I was much younger, try and remember a lot of details. And I would go in and I would want to write down everything somebody said. But now I hold one of these frameworks in my head, and I can, without judgment, if I'm managing myself, I can see how all of the aspects of a whole fit together. I can see the pieces that are really important to focus on and the relationships between them. And I can call that back up as a whole experience because I've been embedded and immersed in it. So I know that the framework thinking that we use for producing consciousness at work actually reduces stress, improves you as a human being, and it improves your ability to recall the things that you think are important to recall.
As you're talking, I can put an image of what it is that you're talking about and how you're using it in your head. But what are some examples of how a business, maybe even using reactive ego and purposeful or modes of behavior, what are some examples of how a business is using this in kind of an integrated way that you're talking about?
This is one of my favorite examples. So we'll just use modes of behavior. When I first enter a company, because I'm usually with them for 3 and up to 8 or more years, the very first thing is we start with usually is strategy, shifting how they think about strategic thinking, because most organizations do reactive strategic planning and thinking. In other words, they're reacting against how their competitors are doing or how they did last year. And if you're in that place and you can observe that, so I will give them a little assessment that has a series of questions that ask them how much of their current strategy is based on reactive experiences. Secondly, I will ask them to look at how much of their strategy and their timing is based on ego. And I give them some clues, like you'll hear yourself be number one, knock them out of their place, be the lead, the ones that are seen as the ones to be loyal to. All of those are ego kinds of statements, and you can see that they would be if you were just a person talking about your relationship with somebody else. I want to be the number one. You know, I think about teenagers and how much of their time is spent in wanting to be at the top of the heap. Well, sometimes we don't grow up and we've still got that going on. But if you did strategy, strategic thinking from the position of purposefulness, you can teach them what that looks like. And then a lot of it they intuitively know, but they have been taught by so many consultants that you do it by reacting, that they become very reactive as a company. It also doesn't coalesce the energy and the working together of teams unless you can learn how to do purposeful strategic planning. So it works at the level of an individual to manage yourself, and it works at the level of a global operation. I've done this with DuPont Corporation. I've done it with Colgate. So there's nowhere it doesn't fit. And it's down to the level of the person and up to the level of a whole business.
Got it. So I'm going to play the devil's advocate here for a minute and say, what's wrong with making mindfulness a benefit to working in some organization in Silicon Valley or something? What's wrong with making it a benefit?
I'm not sure I understand the question. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think what I was saying earlier is it's just the thing that it's used as right now. It's not used as a business practice. It's used as something separate. I mean, I think it should be a benefit for everybody. But right now, that's all it is. And that's not enough.
I see what you're saying. So it actually needs to get kind of integrated and woven into the fabric of what you're talking about rather than having it be kind of separated and off to the side.
Yeah, I think we need to go from seeing it as an individual thing someone does and something you practice sitting alone to something you can design so you create consciousness at work with the kind of framework thinking, which I think is the building of critical thinking skills and the personal self-management, which is the reflecting using some of those frameworks. Now you can have both. An individual can build increasing kind of like mental stamina to be self-disciplined, and you can build it and get an organization aligned in a way you never even knew possible. So you need both.
Got it. Thank you. So last question for today. So how do you get business leaders to want to do this? Because in some ways it sounds kind of kooky and out there to most, I would think.
Well, I don't get them to. For the most part, well, I would say maybe there's an exception to this. People have heard about our way of working. They've heard about the results it produces. And they've been told by a CEO or a general manager or someone who is suggesting that they build this kind of practice of the powerful results they've got. And literally, they will say it will change earnings, margins, and cash flow. And they can tell you exactly how much. Like Jeffrey Hollander on my new book just wrote that, you know, we changed his finances for a tiny little business, about $100 million. A year over 4 years, I think it was. And that practice is about building consciousness. And he said also about this work in a Harvard Business Review article he did. He said, you know, you think consciousness is a woo-woo-y kind of thing where you're looking at your navel, but I tell you, it is incredibly practical. It has helped me with my children. It has helped me with my friends and colleagues, and it has changed, transformed a couple of businesses he's been in. So once they hear about it and they know that it's a very practical thing related to improving financial effectiveness, and many of the people are increasingly concerned that we need to be more mindful, not just of our own business, but of our effects in the communities and the planet we live on, they find that they want to do this. So I've never tried to sell it to anybody. It's not sellable. You got to be looking for it.
Carol, thanks so much again for your time today. This has been really educational. I appreciate it. Do you want to suggest articles for Carol to review, pose questions for her to answer, or argue with her response and get a second opinion? Become a member at www.businesssecondopinion.com. Subscribe and review this podcast and get put in a drawing to win a copy of the book or a poster of our readers' favorite quotes from the book. Also subscribe to the blog that accompanies the podcast and newsletter that keeps you up to speed on what's coming next. Join us next Thursday, where Carol and I are going to dig into an article entitled Why Leadership Training Fails and What to Do About It by Michael Beer, Magnus Finstrom, and Derek Schrader from the October 2016 issue of the Harvard Business Review. Business Second Opinion is edited, mixed, and mastered by ResonateRecordings.com. If you have a podcast or want to start a podcast, you can go to ResonateRecordings.com and get your first episode produced for free. This has been Business Second Opinion.